ESPN's baseball webpage right now, all right? Or their homepage. These are the headlines. Yanks Boone not sure if Judge can play Friday. Blue Jays Springer now dealing with quad issue. White Sox place shortstop Anderson, hamstring, on IL. Padres GM, Tatis won't need surgery on his shoulder. Paxton heads to IL as Mariners await MRI results. Bellinger's calf tests show no break day to day. We have a lot of injuries right now in Major League Baseball. We got Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge not playing because of, and this is a quote, general soreness. I have general soreness every day when I get up because I'm old. General soreness. You know, flash John Flaherty, the Yankees analyst on the Yes Network yesterday, was essentially saying, five games, come on. I mean, we've seen this from Aaron Judge before. You need to see Aaron Judge a little healthier. So I'm going to ask you this. We know that all the talk in spring training about the 162-game season was how our team's going to manage the increased workload for their pitchers, understandably. Do you think we've, one, overestimated or underestimated the impact on hitters? Or maybe, and this is something I don't know if we would ever be able to find someone tell us the truth here, Barker, but do you think that maybe teams are being a little more cautious this year with players because we are asking players to go from playing 60 games and kind of a bastardized spring training last year to 162?
Okay, you can 100% say that about Aaron Judge. You know, if Aaron Boone could wrap him in bubble wrap and never let him out of the bubble wrap until the playoffs started, he'd do it. Mm. Because they're not, you know, obviously the Yankees want to win the World Series. They have no chance to win the World Series without a healthy Aaron Judge, in my opinion. The other guys, Tim Anderson, White Sox want to go anywhere, they're going to have Tim Anderson, not only defensively, but offensively. Mm-hmm. You could argue that.
Sure.
Cody Bellinger, he's a big deal. You know, he probably is the one guy in the names that you mentioned on that team, because the Dodgers are loaded, that he may be able to miss a little time. And, you know, you could say the same thing probably about that too, is they'd rather be safe than sorry, lose him for a couple of days instead of 4 or 5 weeks. The general soreness thing makes you scratch your head. He just left spring training. Spring training is all about getting the soreness out.
Now, he was sore at the end of spring training, although the thinking seemed to be that it was kind of flu-related. It wasn't COVID-19. The Yankees were very clear about that. But when he left spring training, there was concern about you know, his lats or things like that.
So many issues that he's had. You would think they would make another thing up instead of general soreness. Everybody goes to work.
Man, there's a lot of body parts there.
Everybody that goes to work has general soreness. Everybody.
Well, you don't.
I do.
Come on, man. I've seen you flex. 1,000%
I do.
You don't have general soreness. You got general swole.
Everybody does. It's hard to take that serious. It's hard to take Aaron Judge serious when he says he has, his manager comes out and says he has general soreness, and he's a professional athlete for the New York Yankees. It's hard to feel sorry for him. It truly is. Figure out a way to keep yourself on the field. It's up to you now.
Yeah,
it really is. It's up to you. It's getting a little ridiculous with Aaron. It truly is. What do you do if you're the Yankees? Like, what do you do if you're Aaron Boone? What if you do if you're management? They know how important he is to that team and that lineup.
Arden Zwelling wrote a piece on this on Sportsnet.ca, in which he listed all the injuries, and I listed some of those. But if you go through the list, Eloy Jimenez, Josh Donaldson, Ke'Bryan Hayes, Framber Valdez, Bruiser Gratterall, Sonny Gray, Carlos Carrasco, Dinelson Lamet, Zach Britton, Trevor Rosenthal, Joachim Soria, G-Man Choi, Austin Hayes, Chad Pinder, Tim Anderson, Kevin Kiermaier, and James Paxton, the recent guys. Now, some of those are, you know, some of those are baseball injuries.
Yeah, some of them are baseball guys that throw super hard.
Like James Paxton being hurt.
A lot of movement. He's a big guy. He's had issues before. The leg issues that make you scratch your head a little bit. It's all throughout baseball. I know it's different than when I played. They didn't have all those HP departments when I played. There was none of those having tests to see if you were strong enough to play 5 days in a row. There was none of that.
Yeah, that is the thing that really concerns me. And I'm not enough of a medical or expert or physiotherapist to get this. But injuries are going to happen in sports. Sports where there are impacts involved, guys are always going to get hurt.
Yeah.
Baseball, you're always going to have arm and elbow injuries. I mean, you just are. Shoulder injuries, arm injuries, elbow injuries. And yeah, you know what? Every now and then you get a fluky injury like Nate Pearson's injury.
Sure.
Ball comes back and hits you in the arm. I mean, that's just,
yeah,
that wasn't your day. But I would think that the advent of high performance departments would cut down on the number of quad injuries, groin injuries. You know what I'm saying? Like you would think that monitoring workload would eliminate the nagging injury. That's what I don't get.
Okay. Let me throw this at you. What if it's an issue of all these organizations worried about players' appearances? How they look. What's the first thing you always say when you see a guy in spring training? Oh, man, look how much weight he looks like he's lost. He's slimmed down so much. Yeah. Organizations are all like that now. It's and all these players are, you know, there can't be any fat here. There can't be any fat there. You know, I got to make sure my jersey's all tucked in the right way. And there's, you know, it's, can you pull fat?
Are you asking me? Thanks for that. I mean, I can right now if you want.
Just it seems like, you know,
is that what you mean by
all the people
fat?
That you were just mentioning are those people that have any body fat whatsoever?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, some of the pitchers, obviously, because of the way they want those guys to throw, which is max effort as long as you can give it to us.
Look at that right there. Okay, that's right there. That
hamstring.
We're watching Ketel Marte run out a
hamstring.
A grounder. Now, look at that.
Look how he looks. You got to stay in shape.
Here's Bellinger. They're talking about the same thing we are. Here's Bellinger. Okay,
I think he got stepped on.
He got stepped on.
That's a little different.
Right. But again, our point still kind of holds. There's been a lot of sort of nagging.
Yeah.
Muscle injuries. And look, I don't know if you ever had to do this. I doubt it. But I remember when we used to go to spring training and you would see guys wearing, they're almost like those green garbage bag tops inside their shirts to sweat.
Yeah. Coaches I saw do that. I never saw a player do that.
I've seen a player. I'll tell you, Vladimir Guerrero Sr. one year.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen players have to do that. I've absolutely seen players have to do that.
Huh.
And the idea is to kind of sweat yourself.
Well, there's one extreme to the other. Like, I mean, that's an extreme side of it.
Yeah.
Where they've gained too much weight but there has to be a happy medium.
But my point is guys used to come into spring training and kind of work themselves into shape. And now it's almost as if you expect to show up, pass a whole bunch of tests, and boom, then you start doing the baseball stuff.
Yeah.
Again, it's possible that this is just bad luck. But the Aaron Judge thing really got me thinking. And you know, obviously it was a big story in New York as well. Come on, you're telling the New York media that Aaron Judge, who is going
general
to be the
soreness.
Next Derek Jeter, can't play because of general soreness.
That's why I'm very surprised they didn't make something else up. He stubbed his toe or something.
Fell down the stairs.
Something.
Anyhow, so there you go. We'll be joined by Billy Ripken of MLB Network. I'll ask him. I mean, you know, he knows a lot of people around the game. He's aware of what's going on. I'll ask him if this is just fluke, if it's something maybe we've overlooked because we were so fixated in pitching. Don't want to take it away, take the news away from the fact that the Blue Jays play their home opener tonight in Dunedin against the Los Angeles Angels. Ross Stripling for the Jays, Griffin Canning for the Angels. You did a, we have a spy in Dunedin. I'm not going to say
really.
Who.
Not really.
We checked in on the weather, on
the
weather
forecast.
Which
way the wind's blowing? Well, the weather's nice, 72 degrees at tip-off time. You'd be all right there.
Tip-off time.
Well, you know, that's what it
wrong
is.
Sport.
But it's the wind's blowing southwest, which what we came up with, that's blowing in from right field. So it's the wind's going to be in the hitter's face.
Mm.
I don't know if that's a great thing, or but it's only 4 miles an hour. It's not a huge...
Bad for Rowdy, good for Ross.
If Rowdy's playing.
If Rowdy's playing. Look, and I wanted to ask you this: if you think that we've only seen the ballpark in Dunedin play in spring training, and the climate won't change that much for the first month of the season. It's not really until I think June where it really becomes hotter than the Hobbs of Hell in Florida. Do you think though that playing in this ballpark is this maybe not the last chance for Rowdy, but these games in Dunedin, are these a good chance for Rowdy to get going?
Yeah, I think he has to. I think it's, you know, it's, what is he, 0 for 16, which is not a huge deal. You know, he goes 3 for 4 if he plays today. We won't be talking about the 0 for 16.
Oh, that's 3 for 20. Yes, we will.
That's better than being 0 for 20.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Because he had one good day. That's all it takes.
I was being a knob. You know that.
I'm used to overlooking those times. I think you just need to see him have better at bats, more competitive at bats, having a little bit better mechanic adjustments at the plate. Again, it's 0 for 16. It's early in the season. He hasn't played a ton, but he's played enough that. You know, when he has been at the plate, it hasn't looked very good mechanically for whatever reason. Yeah, I have no idea what's going on between his ears, nor do I want to know. You just know by what you're seeing.
Hmm.
And when you see his back foot, when he goes to land with his front foot, is dragging behind, that usually means he's trying to catch up with something. He's late somewhere, and that makes his head move. When your head moves, the ball moves. When the ball moves, you tend to take strikes and swing at balls, and that's – that's what he's...
So how does a big guy get out of that?
Play more. Play all the time. You know, again, he's straight up and down. Straight up and down, guys. Those are big moves. You know, and he starts shoulder width apart. When he makes his big move, that's a lot of ground to make up before his front foot actually hits the ground. And his head can't move a lot. And the only way for me is you have to play a lot. You have to see live pitching. Now, when he's not playing... And you know, does he have a two-strike approach? Yeah, he has stride separation, which means he eliminates his lower half real quick, like
stride
his...
Stride separation.
Yeah,
just explain that. That's
it's
a
like
Barker.
He gets to his athletic position. His hands go back. He gets that rubber band effect where, you know, if you wrap a rubber band around his knee and around his hands, he gets to that point before the ball's actually released from the pitcher. And he's waiting on the ball so he can just use his hands and play pepper with the baseball.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that means. Can he do that 0-0 till he starts, you know, squaring up some baseball, gaining some confidence? Hitting's all about confidence. You know, I hammered that one way. What I'm doing in the cage is working. I can continue to do it because I can actually see it working. Because, you know, he's fighting it in the cage. He's fighting it in batting practice. Now, we're not there. We can't see what his batting practices look like. But I know when I was struggling, which was a lot, I tried to hit a ball as far as I could possibly hit it. You wanted to get that feeling. You wanted to get that, gain that confidence, gain that everything I'm doing before I walk between the lines is working. And the only way to do that is batting practice. So find the best batting practice thrower you can find who will lay it in the same spot over and over and over again and hit that thing as far as you can. Because if you can't hit a homer in batting practice, you can't hit a homer in a game. Jeremy Bernice used to tell me that all the time. Can't hit one in batting practice, can't hit one in the game. Practice what you're preaching. Go to batting practice and try and hammer that thing as far as you can possibly hit it, and hopefully that carries over to the game and you're mechanically sound and everything's driving down and through the baseball. We'll see. We'll see. You know, it'll be interesting, Jeff, to see if the Blue Jays think as highly of Rowdy Tellez as I do and as you do.
This will tell you a lot. Look, everybody around the team, Dan and Buck, they're in on Rowdy.
Yeah.
And I certainly was too, you know, based on what I saw last year and, you know, based on the initial reports out of spring training. And also, quite frankly, I don't think we had any choice.
No.
Again, there's not a lot of left-handed
power. Doesn't come around every day. He can do things to baseballs that most humans can't. Can he consistently do that over 162 games? I'm not sure you'll ever know, especially with Vladdy here. Vladdy's not DHing every day.
No.
And neither's Rowdy. Because, again, it seems like, and I keep going back to this, and I laughed about it when Charlie came out and announced that Rowdy Tellez had made the team. Right there yells and screams that they don't think as highly of Rowdy Tellez as me and you do.
I didn't think that at the time. I thought you were, you know, you're essentially sort of splitting hairs because Charlie came out and announced that Rowdy made the team at the same time he announced Alejandro Kirk made the team. Right. And we're sitting here saying, yeah, they're Rowdy's on everybody's team. Why did you have to announce it? And I don't know. You know, I speculated that perhaps it's one of those things where every day Charlie was telling different players, hey, just to let you know, you made the team. But I was on the Good Show this morning with Ben and JD, and one of the points I made, and I think it's something to keep an eye on as over the next week or so, is if Vladdy plays defensively the way he's played so far, right? If he just kind of does, if he's an average defensive first baseman, doesn't make that error that really kills the team, then one of Rowdy's selling points, I'm a natural first baseman, I'm more comfortable around first base than that guy, that goes out the window. Because if one, Vladdy's hitting and looks comfortable at the plate, and two, is okay defensively and isn't costing me games, now I have to ask myself, why am I taking that out of the lineup? Further to that, the point that we made, and it won't be an issue now because of George Springer, but had George Springer been healthy, we're not taking Randall Grichuk out of the lineup. So now my question is, I've got Rowdy Tellez, big power left-handed hitter. He's not getting a lot of playing time. How does he get better? I'm with you. We may be at the point where the organization just kind of goes,
they think they have better options. And if he's not hitting, what's he giving you? He ain't a threat. We see it. The pitchers aren't afraid of him. They're going to come right after him with 94, 95.
Yeah, if he's not hitting, he's not giving me.
They're not scared of him.
I'm not sitting there saying, God, he looks awful at the plate, but man, they're so much better defensively when he's at first base than Vladdy. And I'm not seeing that. I keep bringing this up, and I think it's something that bears repeating. There is a reason this organization wanted Michael Brantley. There's a reason.
Obvious reasons. He's a much better hitter. He hits in the clutch, drive in runs. He can mix up the righties, you know, in the meat of the order. Rowdy Tellez is never going to be one of you like your three or four hitter. He was going to be down at the bottom of the order, 6, 7, 8, somewhere in that range. I'm with you. You know, everybody wants
a guy
that can hit line to line and drive in big runs, and everybody wants that. But this will tell you. If they think enough of Rowdy to ride this out and let him figure it out, which the only way you do that's to let him play a little and let him go through his ups and downs. Maybe tonight I'll tell you a little bit if he's in the lineup. Because he didn't look real good yesterday with his pinch hit. Now, pinch hitting's the hardest thing to do in baseball, I think. I've tried it. It's very hard, just routine-wise. And you take 1,000 swings. You don't really know, is 1,000 too many or is it not enough?
But you know what, Bark? He got, when I send a pinch hitter up to the plate, I'm hoping you've got enough confidence in yourself that if you see a hittable fastball, you hit it.
Sure.
And he didn't do that.
Well, at least you give yourself a chance to hit it.
He didn't give himself a chance.
Yeah, he doesn't have a chance right now.
Which begs the question again, if that's not part of your game. See, Buck made a point, and I want to say it was the second game of the Rangers series. And, you know, look, if you look at the Jays' offensive numbers, they're not great right now. But Buck kind of talked about how, you know, what you didn't see was that sort of big inning, you know, where they batted around or they sent eight people to the plate or all that. Mm. And I think that's where, and again, I'm not saying Michael Brantley is going to solve all the issues, but that's where a bat like that helps. I look at that lineup and they're guys that scare you because they can hit home runs, but I don't have that guy that I know. God, this guy's going to make contact.
It's super early. Yeah, we have only played six games.
Bo's
looked halfway decent. You know, he's hit a couple of home runs. You know, he hammered a fastball in.
Biggio really concerns me.
He does.
I can't have that and Rowdy Telesco.
Well, you would sure think when everybody's healthy, Cavan's probably not going to hit second in your order. He's just not. You know, the big adjustment that the league's made against him will probably eliminate him hitting second, at least for the time being, until he can figure out how to either lay off it, which is ultimately what you want to try and do. You can't be making big changes, which that mental change of I need to swing often and early, that's a big change.
Mm.
And now you're trying to change your bat path. That's a little bit much for him to ask of him to try and do. So you move him down the order, maybe take a little pressure off of him. And, oh, by the way, he's trying to learn how to play a new position. He's not trying to hurt the team that way. You're asking a lot of that.
Yep.
So it's a little early for us to be, you know, we don't have this and we don't have that and they need this and they need that. Well, look at what they do have.
But and I think you can still make those points though. I think you can still make those points. I think we, and maybe it's because there wasn't as much media down in spring training as there normally is. I think we slept in some things. You pointed out yesterday, this is a team that has an issue handling velocity. It does. And it's not, I'm not saying that the season's a write-off or anything like that, or it can't get better, but I'm saying I think we got a little carried away with this team. Maybe. I didn't. I mean, I am going to playoffs, but
you're pointing at me because I said 90 and 72.
Yeah, 90 and 72. Ain't getting.
Well, I did say for that to happen, five guys had to play 140-plus games. You think that's happening? Those what I'm saying, you know? Mm-hmm. If one thing happens, you have a real good chance of the other thing happening.
Bill Ripken of the MLB Network will join us. We'll see if Bill's got any insight into why all these injuries are occurring, why all these groins are a popping and hammies are a pulling. And I'll ask Bill Ripken if he ever sat out a game with general soreness. I wonder if Cal did.
I think so. Yeah. I don't think I'm going to play today. I got general soreness.
God. Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. The Blue Jays home opener tonight. We're giving away more Blue Jays prize packs this week. Listen for the secret player names every day, Mr. Barker, and text them to 590-590 to enter. You can win a Blue Jay grit kit or a blue grit kit. That, I believe, is the marketing slogan this year, which includes all sorts of Blue Jays merchandise, such as face masks, T-shirts, and discount codes for jerseys. Get yourself one of those sweet powder blue road unis. Text Guerrero to 590-590 right now to enter. For full contest details, go to sportsnet.ca/590. Also, don't forget to download the MLB Ballpark app to play games and keep up with the Blue Jays. Be sure to tune into the home opener with pregame ceremonies, including a national anthem from Toronto by Forte, the Toronto Gay Men's Chorus. That will start at 6:30 p.m. tonight on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So Kevin Barker and myself started our discussion today by talking about the number of players who are already on the IL. And I want to bring Bill Ripken of MLB Network into the conversation. Bill, thank you for doing this. I trust that you're keeping well and staying safe. Look, we spent a lot, like a lot of people in baseball, we spent a lot of the offseason wondering and worrying about how you know, how we were going to get pitchers through 162 games after a 60-game schedule, and whether we were going to have 8-man rotations or 6-man rotations, or like the Texas Rangers are doing, 2 tandem setups and everything like that. Every day I go online or on social media right now, I see another position player going down. I'm wondering if we underestimated the impact of last year on position players this year, or do you think that maybe this is teams being extra cautious right now? Because when I hear Aaron Judge out with general soreness after 5 games, my eyebrows kind of go up a bit.
Yeah, I mean, let me attack this in a couple of different ways, because I think first and foremost, to your one point about talking about the pitchers, how are we going to get them through it? I got some pretty good researchers here at my fingertips at MLB Network, and I went back and looked at the 81 strike-shortened season and the innings pitched leaders in 81, and then I went and looked at 82, which was a completely full season after a shortened season. I think it was 110 games in the strike-shortened season, so they added 50 to the till, and Steve Carlton led the innings pitched that year at 285 innings. And Nolan Ryan at age 35 was 13th on the list with 250 innings. Oof. So this unprecedented territory that we're in, I think, is fairly precedented. And I view it as the way these guys train and what they do, there's no reason in the world for me to think that these pitchers, your number one and your number two guy in your rotation, there's no reason to think they can't make 33 starts, and I'm just going to give them 6 innings. I'm not even going to beat them up. But if you do 33 at 6, that's 198, and I don't see a problem with that. Now, granted, I never stood on the bump and wasn't a big league pitcher, but I just don't quite understand all the negativeness and how are we going to do this? Oh, woe is us and everything else. They train – go out there and pitch. I'm not even asking them to do that much, but I expect some guys to throw 200 innings.
Hmm. Okay, Bill, I hear you all the time on the MLB Network talking about the shift, and I'm not a huge fan of the shift either. I don't think they can ban the shift. I don't think that's going to go over well with organizations, but I do think they can make adjustments to the shift. What adjustments do you think both sides would be happy with?
Well, I don't think there's any reason to do anything, personally. And I've went back and looked at the number of overshifts that have happened year over year. And basically, the batting average on the balls put in play, the new fancy term for BABIP, balls put in play, batting average balls put in play, has basically held true at about 297 year over year over year over year over year. And that tells me that, yes, the overshift may hurt a few big donkeys out there that refuse to give in to the system and say, I'm going to hit the ball the other way a couple times. But I go back and I look at Anthony Rizzo. It was like 2 years ago, I believe, I was on the desk at MLB Network. Rizzo comes up, the first at bat, they overshifted him. He bunted down the third baseline for a knock and got it. The next time up, they overshifted him. And he bunted down the third baseline for a knock and got it. The third time up, they played him straight up. They didn't play him in the overshift. So I think if the overshift does hurt certain guys, and I do believe it does hurt certain guys, but if it's taken 30 points off of one guy, it's given 10 other guys 3 points or 6 other guys 5 points, because it's basically held true year over year. So now, granted, last year the BABIP went down in that pandemic-shortened season. It went down by about 20 points. But the overall league-wide average, batting average, went down 20 points as well. So I'm going to call that a push, and there's a lot of things that happened in 2020 that I'm really not even going to count. But I went back and looked at when they started it, there was like 4,000 overshifts. And then it went up to about 60,000 overshifts. But the batting average on the balls put in play, the only thing that the shift can affect, remain the same. So I'm not so sure it necessarily works as well as people say it does. And I think you ought to just let this thing play out and see if hitters that do get hurt by it actually make an adjustment from time to time.
Yeah, it's interesting. You're the perfect guy to ask this. We have a guy here named Bo Bichette trying to play shortstop with not a tremendously strong arm. And everybody knows who your brother is in Cal Ripken, how good of a shortstop he was and the throws that he could make. If Cal was around Bo, do you think he would have any suggestions on how he could play the position a little bit better with that, you know, without a super strong arm?
Well, I think first and foremost, I think Bo's going to be fine at shortstop.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much advice that he would actually give him. The shortstop play, though, in this first week of the season, from what I've been watching, has not looked very crisp in a lot of different cities. And it's kind of making me scratch my head. And I think some of the things that Earl Weaver told Junior when Cal first went over to short, because he was a shortstop through the minor leagues until Double A. Mm-hmm. Then they made him a third baseman in Double A and Triple A. He got called up as a third baseman. But Earl Weaver's the one that said, no, this guy's going to play shortstop for me. He's going to be fine. And simple advice, simple instruction is, if you go into a hole and backhand a ball, I want you to catch it. I want to make sure you plant your feet, and I want you to throw it to the first baseman in the air. If the guy's safe, so be it. We have a double play ball in order, and that's fine. But if you catch a ball in the hole, hurry it, throw the ball in the stands, and that batter runner's now in second base, I'm going to have a problem with you. So, in essence, I think what Earl Weaver was trying to tell him, or was telling him, treat everything like it's important. Do your job in what you can do. Don't try to do more. And if it doesn't necessarily work out the way we want it right away, we can live to fight another day. But the idea and what my dad always told us when we were doing everything is treat every out like it's important. And I think if you go out there with a mentality of treating every out like it's important, like it was the 27th out in Game 7 of the World Series, if you do that on every play, you're going to be fine. And let's face it, a shortstop, a second baseman that has decent range has about five chances a night. So if you can't treat every chance that you get a night, five of them, like it's important, then maybe you shouldn't be out there playing.
Okay, you've set this up perfectly for me. With that, all of those things you just said on how important every out is, what do you think about the organizations that want all of these different guys to play all these different positions? Do you like it, and do you think it's fair for the player?
I do not like it, and it bothers me to no end. There's the terminology in the game, what is it, positional versatility. Okay, and I go, who cares? What I want is some donkeys, and I want donkeys to go out there and play every day in a certain spot. And then you do have guys that need to be utility players. But I use this terminology and this example a lot. When the Chicago Cubs won the World Series, that was Chris Bryant's year. He won the MVP as well. He played in about 40 games in left field, which I don't quite understand or fathom. My point is, Chris Bryant did not win the MVP of that season because he played 40 games in left field. He won the MVP because he raked, and everybody recognized him as a third baseman. The Chicago Cubs, on their way to win the World Series, played 17 playoff games. They won 11 of them. That's how you win the World Series. Chris Bryant played third base every game in the playoffs in the postseason. So that'll tell me, and should tell everybody, that the Chicago Cubs even know where their best lineup is and what they need to do. So the idea of these guys having different gloves, I'm not buying in on it. I think if you have conviction as an organization and you say, okay, here's my squad, and then this is my guys that are going to fill in and give some guys days off, to your point, I don't think it's fair to players to make them go out there and play different positions on a nightly basis. You cannot put your best defensive team out on the field when you keep a revolving door out there with the defensive position.
Bill, it's interesting hearing you say that, because one of the conversations I had with Paul Quantrill when he was with the Blue Jays organization, of course, his son Cal is a pitcher, he talked about how young players have to learn the art of telling people to basically go bleep themselves. I'm not going to use the word. But he said, and my reaction was the same. He said, no, Jeff, that's an art form. You got to be able to tell a coach, hey, you know what? That's, yeah, versatility's great, but, dude, have you seen me in left field? You know, and you do. You have to do that if you're a young player, don't you?
Well, I think you have to find a way to be able to do that. Now, Paul said it the typical old-fashioned way that an old-school baseball guy would say it. But you're right. It's not doing the team justice either. And look, when you look around at the teams that are successful, and let's go to the Dodgers. They won the World Series last year, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And the year before that, they almost got beat by Milwaukee Brewers. With all the stuff that they were doing with tinkering this, tinkering that. At one time when Milwaukee run a left-hander out there, they had Peterson, Muncy, and Bellinger sitting on the bench because of lefty-lefty matchup. That's about 100 homers that sat on the bench during the postseason. Now, they got through it, and I'll give them credit for that before the Nationals got rid of them. But the idea of having guys play, and if you look at the Dodgers last year, Muncy played every game in the playoffs at first base. Bellinger played every game in center field. They did tinker and kind of play with Jock Peterson, and I'm okay with certain tinkering, but the idea of this analytical approach of this guy hits 260 against this guy, and this guy only hits 257, I'm going to play the guy who hits 260. If you've got guys, you ride them, you figure out where your bench players get in there and play, but I don't think there's a big mystery going on what you need to do to go play the game of baseball and be successful.
Yeah, okay, this is a sort of a hard question maybe for you to answer, but if anybody can, you can, because, you know, you hang around with Sean Casey a lot. He's sort of a hitting expert. When I saw Fernando Tatis Jr. have the big finish and have the issue that he had with his shoulder, it got me thinking, and there's a lot of kids that listen to our show here and would like to, you know, maybe figure out the answer to this. What do you feel about the two-handed finish and the one-handed finish when you're hitting?
To me, that's a natural thing. That's a gift that you would have. You know, Casey did hurt his shoulder too, his right shoulder, which is his lead shoulder, similar to what Tatis is.
Yeah.
Now, Casey is different because Casey throws with his right arm, because he was a left-hand hitter and a right-hand thrower. But the idea of a follow-through, there's a terminology that we like to use in hitting when I talk to my brother, was controlled aggression. And sometimes we all get carried away and we get a little long at home plate. So I think either way, if the follow-through is a natural kind of gift that's kind of like innate in the person,
mm-hmm.
but if you stay in control and you have controlled aggression, you kind of tone that down a little bit. And I think a lot of young players, and Tatis falls into that category, sometimes they want to hit a ball 550 feet instead of 450 feet. And if they figure out that 450 feet is a home run in any ballpark that we play in, I think they're going to be okay with that. But the one hand, two hand doesn't really enter into my conversation, because I never even talk about follow-throughs when I talk to kids about hitting, because the follow-through is an after-effect of everything that comes into play. And if a kid naturally has the gift of a one-hand follow-through, I wouldn't want to take anything naturally away from him by saying, hey, dude, you should keep both hands on the bat, because it may enter his mind in the wrong spot in the hitting sequence.
Bill, really good of you to do this today. Thanks so much. Terrific insight. Love your work and really appreciate your time.
Yeah, it's great stuff.
Now, on another note, are you boys ever going to get to watch your boys play?
Oh.
You went there.
Yeah.
No, I'm not going there in a bad way. I'm just sitting there watching the home opener in Dunedin, and I really appreciated and loved actually watching what the Blue Jay kids were able to do last year.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny because half of them probably played in Buffalo the year before or have some time in there, so they were just kind of going with the flow. But I actually feel bad for you guys not being able to see some of the excitement that your young boys can put out there. I wasn't going anywhere
for
any specific reason. I'm just saying, as a baseball fan, I hope you guys get to watch these guys play.
I mean, I think optimistically a lot of people are hoping that maybe they'll be back here in September, whether or not there'll be a lot of people in the stands. But I think that's probably the best-case scenario.
Fingers crossed.
Well, I'm pulling for you guys. I want you guys to be able to see them, because there's some exciting young players that you guys have.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it.
Thanks for coming on.
All right, boys. Thank you.
Bill Ripken of the MLB Network. So there you go. That's some pretty good advice on hitting.
That's great. The two-handed finish and the one-handed finish – is a big topic, you know, and that controlled aggression, it just makes a ton of sense. And how you would teach a younger person that's learning how to hit and come into themselves. Now, see, I was taught the controlled aggression makes a lot of sense. But I was always taught it was a lot about where you wanted to stand on the plate and the issues that you would have with certain pitches on whether you held on with two hands or one hand. Again, there's no right reason. There's no right way to hit a baseball. Everybody does it a little bit differently. It's to each his own kind of thing. If it works for you, that doesn't mean it's going to work for everybody else. So you don't sit there and try to make everybody do the exact same thing. That's just an interesting topic with how everybody, and Bill put it exactly right, how everybody wants to hit a 550-foot home run instead of just wanting to hit it over the fence.
Yeah. Well, I as Bill was talking, my mind kept going back to some of the stuff Dante Bichette was saying about Bo, too.
And yeah.
There's a natural swing for a guy. And if he's having success with it, I mean, it's probably a reason.
Yeah, they swing. Their swing is so violent from the time they get in their athletic position, which is when their front foot lands, to the time that they make contact with the baseball. It's got to end up somewhere.
Yeah,
and to Bill's point is that controlled. You know, I want to be as quiet and as quick as I possibly can, and use the steering wheel. The steering wheel is your bottom hand. A lot of hitters don't want to do that. They want to because of that shift, and they see everybody on that one side where they think they are. The only place they can get a hit is 500 feet away. And the only way they think they can do that is to overswing. It's a great conversation. He gave a great answer, and it's simplified. You know, you can give this answer that nobody could really understand. It's just that controlled aggression, and somebody's either born with that or they ain't. There's no right reason on why you want to hit one way or the other. It's a interesting thing. It's an interesting topic, too, about the arm strength at shortstop.
Mm-hmm.
It really is.
It is the Blue Jays home opener tonight in Dunedin. First pitch is just after 7 o'clock. We'll be back with more Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Ball and no strike. Aaron waiting. The outfield deep and straight away. Fastball is a high drive into deep left center field. Buckner goes back to the fence. It is gone. What a marvelous moment for baseball. What a marvelous moment for Atlanta and the state of Georgia. What a marvelous moment for the country and the world. A black man is getting a standing ovation in the Deep South for breaking a record of an all-time baseball idol. And it is a great moment for all of us, and particularly for Henry Aaron, who was met at home plate not only by every member of the Braves, but by his father and mother. He threw his arms around his father, and as he left the home plate area, his mother came running across the grass, threw her arms around his neck, kissed him for all she was worth.
47 years ago today, Henry Aaron, and I love the fact that Vin Scully called him Henry. Henry Aaron hit his 715th home run to move past Babe Ruth. Of course, we lost Henry Aaron a few months ago, but I still get goosebumps hearing that. I saw the game on TV. I remember watching that game. One of my first real sort of moments burned into my mind as a sports fan and as a baseball fan. It was wonderful. It was a different time, and we looked at things differently. But if you were a baseball fan, it was so much fun following Henry Aaron. You know, used to get the sporting news, all that stuff, because you weren't watching every Braves game.
Yeah,
used to track it, and it was a year before I started subscribing to the sporting news specifically so I could read up on what he was doing and what Henry.
It's an icon. Kids, I know I was in batting cages wanting to hit 756 home runs and drive in over 2,200 runs and get over 3,700 hits. I mean, to say that that's a career times two, is, you know, we talk about run producers nowadays, and that's a lost art. Driving in a run consistently is an art. Everybody says, it's a luck, it's a team sport. No, those are people that's never tried to get one. Driving in a run is an art. You know, occasionally you'll get lucky and get a jam shot or a ball off the end and drive in a run from second. But to consistently do that when it matters, I know I did when I was growing up. I wanted to be like just like him and drive in and hit a bunch of home runs and be that person in the middle of the order.
We just got 90 seconds left, 2 minutes left. Ross Stripling tonight. What's he got to do?
Curveball's got to be better. I know in his Zoom call after his last start, that was what he was talking about, is he needs that one that really has the bite to it. He says he can make adjustments on the seams with his finger to make it break more. Okay, it's one thing to say it, another thing to do it. You know, and it seems like the wind's not going to be howling out. That shouldn't be an issue. You know, they're going to have to earn the home runs if they hit some off him. So, you know, everybody says the same thing about these guys that don't throw 1,000 miles an hour. You got to really locate your fastball. You know, the fastball in is a big deal for him because that allows him to get away with some, you know, some hanging changeups, a hanging curveball. But to put guys away, be efficient, maybe go a little bit deeper in a game. I'm not talking about going 6-plus, but I'm talking maybe going 5 innings. Mm-hmm. Curveball's got to be a little bit better. He's got to have the one still in a strike. He's got to have the one that he can get back in a count with. And he's got to have the one he can put a hitter away with. He has those. Got a chance.
We'll have a lot to talk about tomorrow. The Blue Jays home opener tonight, 7 o'clock, right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And Sportsnet, plenty of baseball talk ahead with Writer's Block. Stephen Brunt joining me. We'll be back tomorrow.